This is the August 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. And Naomi Bloom is here from Total Farm Marketing at totalfarmmarketing.com. She is in West Bend, Wisconsin. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find our calendar of events. And it is full again next week. State Fair starts here in the state of Illinois next week. Ag Day is Friday. The following Wednesday is the Governor's Sale of Champions. Plus, there are many other events still coming up related to Agronomy Day and other University of Illinois Extension events. And if you can get into the winter time months, particularly December, you'll find that the Illinois Farm Economic Summits will be on the road as well. They've not officially been announced, but I do have the dates and places. We're adding Springfield, actually Sherman, this year. So you'll have Mount Vernon and Sherman, as well as Peoria and DeKalb for the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. Now, let's get a list of items from our panelists to see what they'd like to talk about for the day. Ellen Dearden at AgriView, thank you for being with us. What's on your list?
Well, with a Wednesday WASDE report and a lot of private estimates running around about what a corn yield will or won't be, I think it's important to remember that at this stage of the game, it's pretty early to judge what a corn yield's going to be, and the methods that USDA uses are just as nebulous as what everybody wants to talk about. So armchair looks of yields are out there.
And then on your list, Naomi Bloom.
Yeah, so building on what Ellen said, regarding the WASDE next week, looking at the domestic side of production, but really curious to see what the USDA does with global production numbers, especially wanting to keep an eye on Europe with corn production, with wheat production, and every single category of growth in wheat production around the world. We need to keep an eye on that just in terms of how it could set the stage up for prices for the latter part of 2026 and heading into 27. And then just helping producers be ready for whatever comes out of that report.
Let's do talk about the reports next week. Ellen Dearden, we'll start with the crop production figures. They will be released at 11 a.m. on Wednesday morning next week. As you said, USDA will have a corn forecast. There are a wide variety of numbers. You can talk about those. But let's begin with how they collect the data on this one. This one does not, and no longer has for some time now, include actual counts taken on the ground. That won't happen until September. USDA's not done a horrible job, I don't think. You'll need to give me your opinion on this, of getting a fairly sound number in August since they've dropped that. And I think they actually have a fairly good track record when you compare August to January numbers as well. What are you thinking about it this time?
Well, I think we need to keep in mind that they may shift planted and harvested acres as well as yield. So my feeling is the way USDA uses satellite photos is going to be from space, whether stuff looks green or doesn't look green. And that's kind of a hard sell for me to think that that's a good way to make judgments. There will be some drive-by looks at fields, but primarily looking at a lot of satellite data. So I won't be surprised to see USDA hold their corn yields pretty close to that 183 that they set as a trend line yield earlier this year. That won't be a surprise to me. I think we will see acres shaved, planted acres shaved, however, in corn.
Are you hearing rumblings, Ellen, from producers about nitrogen loss in their fields. And I frankly didn't hear that until I was at a physiology function today on campus. And the soil fertility specialist I talked with yesterday and aired during the closing mark report on Thursday doesn't agree with that, I don't think. He's of a mind that we have a pretty normal crop in mind. But producers seem to be looking for reasons for this crop yield to be lower, and it feels like it may be a falsehood. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, Todd. You know, producers always like to talk about, well, my field looks okay, but my neighbor's really terrible. I mean, that seems to be the normal look-see. Yes, I think there is some denitrification. I don't know how widespread it is, because in the area around Peoria, we didn't get the big, big rains that a lot of people got, like in Vermilion County, Illinois. But, you know, as you go west, decidedly drier west of I-39 and decidedly wetter as you go east of 155. So there's a lot of good corn acres between those two interstates.
Naomi Bloom, you've been listening along. What are you thinking about next week's crop production report?
Yeah, Ellen hit the nail on the head for so many facets of the report. I agree with her on the yield number. I feel like USDA likely keeps that yield number for corn between 183 and 184, just, you know, kind of coinciding with more of the private industry recent satellite imagery data and what they feel that the yields could be out there potentially. And then as far as the bean number goes, you know, a lot of people saying this recent rains that came through is definitely helping their bean crop. So the 53 number from the USDA, I think, is probably not going to see too much adjustment there either. I'm curious about the FSA acre numbers to see what that does for any acreage, you know, slight changes, if any. And then looking over at the global picture, I'm very, very curious, like I had said earlier, just what the USDA does with some of the global numbers. And admittedly, I did not understand the magnitude of the drought in Europe in early July, but, you know, it continues now today with heat warnings across a large portion of Europe yet again today. So the drought there continues, and that really has taken a chunk of production from corn and from wheat. And so that likely is going to bring global production numbers lower and global ending stocks lower. And now you have a situation where it's been a hot minute since we've had lower global production and lower global ending stocks. So it might just kind of set the stage for the United States needing to have a really good crop right now, or we could further see global ending stocks start to trend lower. And then that just sets the whole stage for the latter part of 26 going into 2027, having to keep an eye on what's happening with production in Brazil and Argentina in December, January, and February. So I want to really scrutinize each line item of global production when it comes to wheat on that report next week, along with the USDA United States information. And I want to look at what the USDA does for corn production around the world as well, looking also very specifically at China, what they think China corn production may be, or any potential increase or decrease with Chinese imports. So lots of information coming at us Wednesday, and I think it'll really set the stage for the rest of third quarter and then going into fourth quarter as well.
Ellen, will you be watching those global numbers as closely? Is this something that's been on your radar for a while?
It has been on my radar, and if you talk to anybody that's been to Europe this summer, all they do is talk about they were unable to get into different areas because of the heat warnings or because of wildfires or whatever. And from a corn standpoint, France is the largest corn producer in the EU. So I think we need to keep that in mind, but wheat is still on the radar as well.
Okay, so we'll be watching that to see what those numbers look like. And then once, and those would be in the WASD, or the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates Report. That'll put us after the fact. I do want to talk to both of you about the next several days. Friday, which we're recording before that Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday morning, and how the trade tries to navigate the moving averages, particularly, I think it's the 100-day in the soybeans and the 50-day in the corn, and whether it decides to set and wait it out, or whether there just will be enough pressure to make that breakthrough to the downside. And Naomi, I'll start with you on this one. What do you think?
Well, I have been watching that all week. So we had December corn futures yesterday and today trade at or slightly below the 50-day moving average and approach the 40-day moving average. So on the December corn daily chart, that number that we're watching is the 457 area. And I'm very curious to see if there's going to be any sell stops below that, because the computer sometimes can sniff out those sell stops, and then we could just see a technical sell-off happen. So for the past 2 days, it's tested that important level and it's held, and that's really important. But if by chance Friday or Monday, Tuesday, that support level fails, the downside for December corn very quickly points to 450. And you could argue a quick technical washout closer to 440, again, just based only on technical trading. But if we can hold this 457 area into the weekend, it'll be helpful for next week. And then we might just see quiet trade next week, Monday and Tuesday, ahead of the WASD. But to your point, then on the beans, it's the same thing, where we're watching support at 1175 and 1170 on the November specifically. That's where the 100-day moving average is. So if that should fail, if we see technical selling, the quick washout lower points to about 1150, which would be the bottom of an uptrending line. So technical trading probably is a bigger theme in the next couple days, as overall the news might be lacking until we get to Wednesday's report.
And Ellen, if you want to talk about that and the fundamentals surrounding moving through the month of August and into harvest season and what kind of pressure comes with it.
Well, I just like to throw out on the corn side of things, the last 2 years at the WASD report, we made a low in December corn and we were down into that $4 range. So being tonight being above 460 is somewhat encouraging. We were really dull today. We were just quiet. Even though we rallied corn and soybeans, we did it with no conviction. I don't like days like that from a standpoint. I want to be friendly. And I'm looking to at just, you know, we've got good demand on the corn side of things. We can't quibble with that. We've got good demand from a processor standpoint on the beans. But we just are just unable to find enough bullish news to push things up or to find really good support. If this is a head and shoulders top formation in the corn, which you could argue for on December corn with a neckline here just at that 457 level, that could take you down to 4.25. But again, it's still above that $4 level that we tested the last 2 years.
What are you telling producers at this point about grain that they have to move across the scale, grain that's going in the bin? What kinds of advice do you have for them, Ellen?
I think that the guys that I'm kind of worried about are the ones that have to move more crop into the elevator right at harvest. I hate paying the elevator to store corn. But I think that we will see basis improvement this year into the spring. I think we will see some board improvement into the spring. So I'm wanting to sock away bushels that I have places for. That still doesn't put a plan together for bushels that I have to take to town. Right now, we own some puts, and I think that's a good way to go through this report, long puts, short some $5 calls on the December, and I think that's just a good way to go through this report.
Naomi, what advice have you been giving producers today?
Yeah, real similar. Holding the long puts that we've had for a while here, just getting through the report in case there's a negative surprise. But I'm also looking for that seasonal harvest low, which a lot of times for Deese corn the past, you know, few years has happened between mid-August and late August. So watching for signs of that. And I would say for folks who are selling corn right now, old crop corn that they got to get taken to town here, when we see signs of a harvest low or a technical low, I would really start to look at reownership strategies again, just because the fundamentals have shifted. So, it used to be bearish. I was really bearish in June, but now because of this drought in Europe, I've shifted to a neutral mentality, and it could become quite friendly for the grain markets for December, January, and February, again, depending on South American weather and how this U.S. crop ultimately fares. So make sure you are in tune with all the marketing strategies available to you, and it's going to be very interesting what the USDA has to say on Wednesday.
I believe September 1 is the date that producers in Mato Grosso would be able to actually begin planting. They do have a date at which they have to wait. It's related to Asian soybean rust. It used to be the 15th, and sometimes it does change, but I think it's probably the first of the month. They will wait to plant until there are some rainfalls in that area. And El Nino, particularly, I suppose, a super El Nino, Ellen, could cause them to stay drier longer and maybe stay dry for the season. This must be something that you've been watching and thinking about and what it means for soybeans, too. How do you view that marketplace?
Looking at the driest areas to be in the southern part of Brazil rather than in central or northern Brazil. But I think that it bears watching, because an El Nino, let alone a super El Nino like we've got in the making this year, certainly leans things to the dry side in both Argentina and in southern Brazil.
Ellen, how do the fundamentals in the beef marketplace look for you today?
Well, let's see. We have cattle right now on feed. I think they look fabulous. But no. the market sold off pretty easy. We had a couple of days higher, but the market has sold off pretty easily. The guys that I'm working with right now are getting more concerned about calves that they intend to sell this fall. It's big market time for calves in September and October in this neck of the woods, and they certainly are seeing the market all over the place. But I think the fundamentals are still reasonably good on the live cattle, whether we just kind of got ahead of ourselves. The cutouts have been a little bit on the softer side. We had a sharp up day yesterday in the cutouts, but by and large, the cutouts are down just a hair.
And Naomi, I don't often ask about dairy, but because you're in dairy country and I know you work with them closely, what are your dairy producers thinking, and what are you worried about for them today?
Yeah, so the theme in dairy right now just continues to be huge amounts of production of milk. And that's because we have more cows milking because of the beef on dairy situation. So those calves are precious commodities and keeping the dairy market afloat, but it is still leading to higher productions of milk. But thankfully, demand for dairy products remains strong, both domestically and on the export front. But I think the reality is that we're going to likely see Class 3 milk futures maybe just trade in a lackluster sideways pattern. Lackluster for milk is a dollar range, by the way. But that would be my outlook for now, because we still have the same situation of higher production. Maybe we'll see a pullback because of the heat we've had this summer, but we have plenty of cows available and milking. So quiet markets there is my thought for the short term. But again, dairy demand is phenomenal.
And now time for a final word from each of you. Ellen Dearden, I'll start with you. Your final word for the day.
The hog market looks terrible. It's really difficult for me to understand how we haven't seen a big surge in demand for hogs, for pork at the retail counter. Because it certainly is priced well, but the futures really do not look promising at all.
And Naomi Bloom, your final word.
Keep an eye on those geopolitical events. One flare-up in the Middle East or in the Black Sea region can always trump anything that's happening with the production side of agriculture in the short term. So really stay in tune to those markets as well.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Ellen Dearden from Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. And Naomi Bloom of Total Farm Marketing at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Thank you for listening. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.